Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Good morning. It is spring here in St. Louis. Feels pretty good.
There's literally, when you said that, there were literal birds singing out the window.
I could hear it. I could hear it. Made me feel good. It's supposed to be like 70 degrees today and sunny. Should be a great one. Should be a great one to learn.
Absolutely.
I'd like to learn something today.
So would I.
I feel good when I learn something. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the process of learning. Let's talk about enlightening experiences.
I like it.
Let's talk about education again.
Part two. Part deuce. All right. Education part two. I like that. When you said you like learning, I do as well. But as I've gotten older, I don't know if it's a good thing. It's just a thing. I have just such a bias for if I'm learning something and I know I'm not going to use it, I like learning it less. So for me, my bias is when I'm learning something, I need to be able to use it in my life or at least share it with somebody else. And now that I have kids, that makes it easier, of course. But I like the process of learning, but then I want to be like that candle that lights other candles with what I learned. And you seem to be that way too. When you learn something, you're always like, I read it. I read this. And you like to share knowledge as well.
I love to share knowledge.
Yeah. So I think that that's part
of learning. Yeah. So I think you're talking about what is interesting. Right? And what is not?
Well,
right?
It's not that I'm not. Where my brain was going was, I think in a formal schooling system, one thing you're taught is explanation, how to explain what you're learning to other people. When you go through the school or education of just life, right? You don't go to college or something. You're not as focused on explaining everything you're doing. You're focused on just doing. And others have to pick up on that on their own. So I think there's a benefit to explaining, but I think there's a big drawback where people focus way too much on that instead of just doing stuff.
Yeah, you're hitting on one piece of something I wanted to talk about, which is order of learning. Mm. So you're saying we learn how to explain things to people in school, but in life we just learn to do. And I think that's true.
I mean, obviously that's very broad, but what I was saying. But yeah. I mean, I do think that that's the case. Is a car mechanic. He learns how to fix the engine. He's not necessarily being trained on how to translate what he's doing to the customer.
And it's so interesting how in a schooling system, the way that he proves he learned how to fix an engine is by writing something down on a paper about a question of what you would do if you found this on an engine.
You're right. Now, hopefully nowadays, I hope they're doing tests by like actually working on engines. I'm sure they are, but it wasn't that way for a long time, I'm sure. And how does he prove his knowledge? How does he prove he's credible and expert? There's a piece of paper on the wall behind the counter.
I love what you're saying, which is like, it's almost, you know, when I got my first job, that's where it really sunk into me. Like, oh my gosh, just about 90% of what I paid for in this great education from a great, you know, institution that cost, you know, $100,000
plus. Talking college.
Yeah, college. 90% of it is not applicable to what I'm going to be doing in my career. Maybe 80%, but some very large percentage. And not only that, I have so much to learn. Like I was sitting down like, oh my gosh, I have so much to learn. I paid all this to learn the stuff so I could do this. And now is when the learning really starts. And it was through doing, like you're talking about.
You know, I am a former professor of university. So clearly I believe in schooling and education, but I do not equate those two things together. For me, learning is the most important part of all of it. I think schooling and education should be subservient to the process of learning. And the most important thing somebody can do is learn how to learn. And we all learn differently. And so you really have to be in touch with yourself. And that's probably going to change over time as you get, as you bump into life and get more experiences. But once you pay attention and you're aware of how you learn most effectively, that's a fucking superpower.
So you talked about order of operation, or I called out that we're talking around order of operations, and I think we're dancing around it because you hit on explaining versus doing. You hit on learning to learn. And so I actually thought about this briefly, like, why don't they teach us in a foundational – they say, oh, we teach the foundations and then you build from there. And sure, with reading and writing and stuff like that, basic math, that's the case. You need to know those things because that's a foundation to build on. But the things that you're talking about, to me, are the foundation to be successful in life. Learning to learn, right? Learning to properly communicate yourself. When you say explaining,
right,
man, yes. Learning how to handle conflict. Like, those are foundational things that
– how to work with humans.
That, yes, that as an adult you have to know in order to be successful, that never get taught. Never get taught. Learning to learn. When did you learn that? In grade school or high school or college? You never did.
Yeah, I mean
– You never did.
My master's degree is when I first started to bump into something like that.
So that's why I'm saying order of operations to me is – question
out of whack. Now, I have to say, I assume you'd agree with me. We got to put an asterisk there. Like, you need to have basic literacy, math literacy, some basic stuff to be quasi functional.
And I'm sure a lot of that is driven by age,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, teaching, it'd be very hard to start talking to kindergartners and first graders about learning how to learn
or algebra, right? Advanced stuff. You've got to build. There's building blocks. So I want people to understand we're not discrediting like the whole schooling or education system. We're focusing a little more, it sounds like, on when you're a bit older, and some of the things that we find important.
Some of the things that are included in a typical education versus excluded.
Well, and we both went through a liberal arts institution, and my degree was in the College of Arts and Sciences, whereas yours was, I think, in the business school.
Yeah.
So I was probably, I was exposed to a wider variety of courses by fiat, by structure, because I had to take a wider variety of courses because of the curriculum. Now, was that good or was that bad? Well, I didn't learn shit from those courses because I didn't care. I just played school. Give me the good grade. Let me get the teacher to like me. On to the next thing. Looking back, I could have done a better job at trying to take things out of that, and I could make connections. So I'm reading a really interesting book called Range, and the subtitle is How Generalists Will Rule in a Specialized World. And it's all about the most innovative and creative people are that way because they're more like a letter T. They have some deep knowledge of something, but they have wide knowledge of a wide variety of things, and they work at the edges. And they connect fields or disciplines or knowledge areas that really deep specialists who never look up and take their horse blinders off, they have no clue about.
Yeah.
So I actually think there is utility into learning about lots of different things because we don't know how it can be applied. My critique is – I can get on the fucking internet and do that.
Yeah, that's
I don't true. Need to pay $60,000 a year to have a curated syllabus.
Yeah,
I could do that on my own. And I think we're going to start seeing individual customized education programs proliferating where you fill out assessments talking about who you are, how you learn. And I think you're going to start seeing customized syllabi for things you should read and connections you can make.
Ooh, I like that.
And if it doesn't sort of exist, like somebody should build it.
Like personalized medicine.
100%.
Personalized education. Absolutely, there should be personalized education.
Now, you can get that, but you're paying literally $100,000 a year. My dissertation advisor's daughter went to one of these very small liberal arts schools in Rhode Island. I think there was 5,000 or fewer students. They owned their own ski mountain. You get there, you have to curate your own curriculum for all 4 years, which is awesome because it forces you to be invested in what you're doing.
That's cool.
But that takes some real intellectual autonomy, and that ain't just what the masses have.
Right. Right. It's hard to build a program
right. for that. Like, everyone that's going there is from a privileged background or is just true, like a super genius.
And that's something that's probably hard to scale. Like you said, 5,000 people. Tiny.
They can't be scaled. Can't because, be much bigger than because that. Because schooling is for, as they say, the gray masses. Schooling is for teaching to the mean. It helps pull those up from the bottom, and it absolutely hurts the top performers who could be going more quickly.
We talked about this last time.
Yeah,
it's one of the reasons why I like different methods of schooling outside
Khan Academy.
Of the, what we use today. Yeah.
I read an awesome book called Summerhill School. It was a school that this Scotsman created in England. I believe he was originally from Wales, and it was in the 60s and 70s, and it could still be around, but he's dead. Anyway, the school focused solely on freedom, giving kids freedom. And man, it was just an awesome experiment. But he said it just can't be scaled. It can't be done because literally kids had the opportunity to learn to read, to learn to write, to learn to do math when they wanted to. It was awesome how, man, it was powerful.
You know
the kids ran the school. The kids made all the decisions.
You're hitting on something that is, I mean, maybe as a parent, I need to prioritize this more. But basically, let's talk about schooling, the practicalities of schooling, and the trade-offs of, of life, right? So we're talking about ideal educations here, right? So one of the things that I hoped, right after I read One World Schoolhouse, was I am going to find a school that does Khan Academy, and I'm going to make sure my kids go there. But then life happened, and
we live in the Midwest.
We live in the Midwest, and there's nowhere. And even do I want to spend $25,000 a year or more for my kids to go to a grade school?
They're using Khan Academy, which is a free tool on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. So you get my point, which is the practicalities of schooling versus the ideals of what schooling could be, and what trade-offs do you make in the time and place that you are? One of the things that sucks that is true, this pandemic has taught everyone is what percentage of schooling is childcare?
Oh my God, a lot.
You know what I mean?
For younger kids, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, with the schooling, and I don't think we talked about this in our first episode, with the formal schooling part, man, it used to be just college, but it ain't anymore with your guys' experience with the college school recently. It's status. It is status driven.
Yeah.
It is where are you sending your kids? And I just think of it as a system. Systems theory is such a powerful thinking tool. Input is the children. Input is the dollars. Those are the two main inputs at a fancy school. So, when someone is trying to convince me, hey, you should spend 18 grand or 25 grand to send your kid to preschool, my brain can't help but go to, okay, how many astronauts have we graduated from the school? How many presidents? How many people that have cured cancer? How many people that have cured homeless? Why am I doing this? Give me the outputs. What's the results you're getting from this? Oh, people are happier and have better well-being? Okay, how are you measuring those things? It's horseshit because what schools have done, universities specifically, but also fancy private schools, and we went to good private schools, is they've tricked everyone into thinking it's not a business. And they've tricked themselves into thinking about that. Admissions departments, folks, are sales departments. High-level administrators are in business development. And the good ones know that.
Yeah.
The bad ones don't. And they don't even know that they're selling.
It's funny. You'll hear a school be like, there's a problem. We have declining enrollment. That means sales are down.
That's right. Absolutely.
They can't use
but
that
But it's
language.
The greatest business that masquerades not as a business because it makes people – reduces your status. If you're the kid that doesn't think college is for you, you go to the state school or you go to the community college, you feel inferior to folks. And man, it should be the exact opposite. As a country or as in the world, but the U.S. I'll focus on, we should focus on building up knowledge, building up skills. I don't think it's that way right now. I think it's much more about diversification, differentiation, status-driven things. And I'm like, I just don't see that being useful right now. Especially you get the pandemic going. Harvard still charged full tuition and wouldn't even let people come to campus. Are you kidding me?
That's a business.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, so building up knowledge and building up, what do you mean by that versus?
I mean, we have to get more. Okay, so SIUE, where I retired, they had a major that was sort of a joke major, both among students and among faculty, called integrative studies. And it's where you don't pick one major or focus area to learn about. You pick two or more and you bring them together. And you're supposed to really synthesize new knowledge. Philosophically, that is awesome. That is how the ancients used to learn. That is the greatest way to do it. The way it's being executed in the modern education environment, it's a total joke. It's a total write-off. Faculty look at the students as there as losers, as low-level students. Losers, wrong word. Low-achieving students. Students that want to get the easy ticket, they'll do integrative studies. And it's so unfortunate because that's what I mean. That would be an opportunity where you can really begin to get creative and connect fields that have never talked to each other. That's where knowledge explosions are born.
That's where creation is.
Yes, not in deep subspecialty fields. Sure, you can innovate there and get patents. That's incremental innovation.
Yeah.
Big innovation comes from people outside, not just of the box, but outside of geometry itself.
Yeah,
thinking well, through problems.
Entire new fields are created that
way. So that's what I mean. If you want to create bump ends, you need people who look at the world totally differently, working together, talking together, arguing together. And integrative studies at college level has an opportunity to do that. But at least at my old institution, it's just not done well and it's not taken seriously.
That's like the schooling or full educational program version of what we talked about on last episode is James Altucher's idea sex. Take two seemingly unrelated ideas and put them together. And that's where like really interesting 100%. Stuff happens.
So that's like the college curriculum form of that. One other thing I wanted to say that goes along with education, formal schooling, it's all status, whether we want it to be or not, because that's our psychology and we're social animals and we always want to have higher status and be up on the hierarchy rather than down. But it comes with psychological baggage and consequences. The titles we get, the credentials we get for better or worse, it can harden our hearts. It can reduce compassion. It can lead to less understanding, condescending views, label-driven thinking, arrogance, myopic ignorance. It doesn't have to, but I sure see that oftentimes.
Yeah, and you're hitting on something which is expectations, measurement, quote-unquote success. I hear people rail on standardized testing all the time, and I've always been like – I was always great
at standardized tests. You're very good at it.
And so I've been like, I don't know what people's problem is with standardized tests.
This is great.
Just do good at them, and you'll feel way better. But I'm actually – what you're saying now is making me think about standardized tests are – they're just a thing. They don't – they're one measurement of – performance.
It's correlated that, to, yeah,
performance. That is not, yeah, it is not, it's not necessarily the most helpful thing. What you're talking about is, you know, making a new way, like breaking out of standardization and expectations, grades based on scales of points that are assigned by a teacher. Like, learning is not that. You know what I mean? Like,
learning is failing. Yeah. Learning is mistakes. Yeah. Learning is getting scars and then reflecting on that and then changing your actions in the future. So for me, that's why I loved experiential learning. We won't get into that because we talked about that last time. I will say when you transition from the student world of being a student to the world of being a worker or an owner of a business, and even if you stay in academia, you're still a worker. You're not an owner. You aren't rewarded for what you know.
Life doesn't tell you, study this chapter and then execute it next week in your life. And then if you do it with 90% accuracy, you will be quote unquote successful in your life. Yeah, that's not how life works.
We're not rewarded or hired for what we know. We're rewarded and hired for what we do with what we know. That's a huge difference. And that's in academia too. People aren't rewarded for what they know as a professor. They're rewarded for what they do with what they know. And what a professor does is hopefully share that in a meaningful way that connects to students' lives and helps them break through their self-limiting beliefs. Or you're publishing and hopefully in theory creating new knowledge, which that's another whole joke I could talk through.
There are perfect examples of what you're talking about. People who are brilliant, who know a lot and don't make a lot of money, they're not quote unquote successful in life, versus people who aren't the brightest people, but they have successful businesses and they've achieved a lot in life. And it's interesting to think about those two dichotomies and then to say, well, then what about the education system? Like, didn't work so well with those people? Or how did they break out of those quote-unquote expectations? Because you would sit them down for a test, a performance-based test on any of their whatever. One of them would get straight A's. One of them would score very highly. The other one very poorly. But that doesn't matter after school is over and you're out in the real world.
Well, and that's why there's a guy I really like, Nassim Nicholas Taleb. He admires but critiques game theory, which I know you're a big fan of. And it's a powerful tool to think through things. But there's at least one huge gaping hole of game theory is that when you're working within game theory, there are rules. There are known inputs and expected outputs. In life, you don't know what the problem is. You have to figure out the problem before the solution. And guess what? There's plenty of people around who change the rules as you go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's totally different. It's a vacuum versus the real world.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the difference between theory and practice. Is theory useful? Well, sure. If you're testing it out and trying new things with your ideas, if you just stay in a bubble and just continue to think through things, I just don't find that useful.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say it like this. Life is the ultimate pop quiz.
That's right. You've got to figure out what the damn questions are,
just
even.
Just throws stuff at you. You don't know. You don't know. Yeah, so I guess, you know, this touches back to what I was talking about with order of operations, right? I mean, at some point, we're teaching our kids trigonometry and stuff, and those same kids don't have basic understandings of the things that they're going to need to do as an adult. They don't understand conflict resolution. They don't understand basic, you know, communication, working in teams. I don't even, you know what, we can go down the list of what we think foundational things are.
Yeah, but it gets schooling gets political too, though, because what we really need to be doing is what I believe the Japanese called Ikigai, Ikigai. Think of it as a bullseye, a crosshair, where if you can hit the middle of it, it's like a overlapping circles of a Venn diagram. It's what you love, what you're passionate about, what you're good at, what society has a need for. So what the current world problems are and where they're going, and what you can make money at. When you can marry those four things, you will live a successful, happy, fulfilled, meaningful, productive life. And where I think education gets wrong is it's often taught by people who are focusing in on either their pet project for their own personal political belief about what they think, or they're looking at problems backwards rather than the problems that are going to be moving forwards, or they're looking at forward-facing problems, but then other folks come in and they're like, oh, you're liberal, or oh, you're conservative. Those problems aren't real problems. So there's a layer of complexity
you're
with
right.
that schooling, man.
I think that that also depends on institutions and their projection upon the person, right?
Sure.
And so that's another thing about like one of the foundational elements of learning is like what institutions do you want to make yourself a part of? Because you're talking about rules, right? And you're like, in game theory, there are rules. Well, guess what? As soon as you become a member of an institution, you get a bunch of rules.
You're now, when you do something dumb, you're now representing that organization you are part of.
Some of those rules are documented and communicated. Some of those rules are not.
Yeah, those are norms.
And you just learn those. Oh, can't do that here.
Informal socialization.
Yeah. I got a bad reaction when I said that. I guess that's not a popular idea at this institution. And you have to learn to navigate that way. So I think it's interesting, the idea of Ikigai. It's such a powerful idea. I'm looking at it right now. It's got the circles.
Yeah.
And it's like what we love, what we're good at, what the world needs, and what we can be paid for. Those are on the outside.
Yep.
And then as you they start to overlap, you end up in areas that you would call your passion, your profession, your vocation, or your mission. And then in the middle, if that's the sweet spot, that's that bullseye that you
talked
about.
That's what Ikigai is.
Where your passion, profession, vocation, and mission can all meld together, fulfilling what we love, what we're good at, and what the world needs, and what you can be paid for.
And this, to me, is great if it's used in the right way, because it's just a model or a tool. It shouldn't be interpreted as, oh, man, I need to get to the middle and just stay there, because that's horseshit. You can't. Right? You have to know that you're going to be moving around this thing throughout different parts of your life, just like the westernized version of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You don't get to self transcendence and it's just, oh, I'm on the mountaintop forever. Nope. It just starts over and new goals get created.
It's a perfect. So think about the way I can think about what you just said, because I'm trying to process that. Is yeah, there are periods in life where what you can be paid for is an important part. We're in that phase right now.
Yep, financial foundation phase.
But when you're younger and when you're older, that's a much less important piece. And then the shift goes to more of what you love, more of what the world needs maybe versus what we're paid for. At least that's – and people make trade-offs and choices about what it is they decide to dedicate their life and time to based on those things.
Well, yeah. And again, we're only talking from our own experience, which is very similar to each other. You know, there are other people you bump into, their whole life, they're mission driven, you know, or they're just driven to be for selfless service reasons. That is the exception to the rule, but those people do exist. Then there's the other extreme where people are just totally selfish, only doing it for themselves and money, and then trying to convince themselves and others it's just to serve others.
Right. Or whatever they're doing.
But you know, those people also aren't, they're the exception to the rule, because if not, this country wouldn't exist.
True.
It would be totally corrupt. Like
the nonstop workers, the Scrooges of the world. Mm-hmm. Bah humbug.
So for me, education and learning is really the core part for me for education or schooling. You want to learn how to learn. And it's about not being judgmental, but forming the process of good judgment. And that's hard to teach. But that's really what I want my kids is to exert discretion and good judgment when making decisions and taking actions. That's it. That's learning. And you learn by making bad decisions and making the wrong choice over time and realizing that and reflecting and altering. It ain't about being judgmental, which we all are to a degree, but it's about having good judgment, and it's just decision making. So learning for me is really action oriented choice, discretion, decision making.
Yeah, it goes to what you talked about with there is no set curriculum. There is no set agenda. And it's like you're just out there navigating this big, complex world. One of the things you said that was learning, you know, you were talking about learning how to learn that I thought about was like, how do you learn how to learn? What's one of the first things? And I think one of the first things of learning how to learn is becoming aware of that which you do not know. You know what I mean? Like, there's a menu out there of things to learn.
Yeah.
But it's not written. You have to write the menu yourself.
Wise education and knowledge is not wisdom. And just because somebody's educated or very knowledgeable doesn't mean that they're not wise. It just means that those two things aren't always the same. A wise person adopts a beginner's mindset and keeps it. They know that they don't know everything, and they're more important. They're willing to say to somebody, hey, you know, I want to learn more about this. There's a little Dr. Fauci, back when the pandemic kicked off, he was telling a story about George Bush Sr. when the AIDS pandemic was really going nuts. And Bush came into the lab, and he's looking around kind of bewildered. He's just like, do you have any questions, Mr. President? And he's just like, I have a lot. He's like, I have a lot to learn, and can you teach me? He's like, I have 1 hour here, and I want you to teach me as much as you can in 1 hour. And he was like, no president has just ever said that to him. And that burns in my brain. It wasn't political because there was no cameras in the room. He wasn't doing it to look good. He was doing it because he truly wanted to learn as much as he could in an hour from this guy. And that, to me, is powerful. That's a wisdom mindset, a beginner's mindset. being comfortable, being uncomfortable, knowing that you don't know the most about something. That's a problem we have.
The most powerful man in the world making that admission.
Some lab scientist at the time.
How awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was a really powerful story.
Cool. That's a good one. I love that. And I think it goes to show, like, knowing what you don't know is so important. And learning that, okay, I'm in this position. I know what's expected of me. I know how I'm going to have to perform, right? So right. That's what he was thinking. He was thinking, I'm going to have to make and recommend policy decisions based on my knowledge in this area. And I'm in a lab here with people who know a lot about it. And
I know the most
very
about
little
it.
About it.
Right.
So how can I make myself the most effective at my performance making these policy
and
decisions?
Yeah. Knowing that I'm not going to become some doctor level
exactly.
knowledge, but give me something that I can latch on to.
Exactly. And I think that's the life. That's the dance of learning. Right? It's understanding your role in this world and what your performance needs to be.
Yes.
And preparing yourself
right.
for that.
But it's being humble. That's where Trump's the exact opposite. That's where status and ego get in the way. Bush put his ego aside and said, you know more than me. You're higher up on the hierarchy of this knowledge than I am, even though I'm way more powerful than you. Teach me. Could you imagine Donald Trump saying that to somebody? Right? Or tons of politicians.
I'm the smartest lab.
I'm the greatest lab man in the world. AIDS, that's four letters. I know them.
People love my labs. People love.
But it's just.
People. We have the best labs in the world.
It's just. The point is, humility goes along with wisdom.
Yeah.
And if people have to advertise their wisdom or advertise their intellectualism, to me, they're not intellectual or wise.
That's something, man. That's interesting. Humility goes a long way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else do you want to talk about? I have a couple other things.
No, you go. You lead. I wanted to do this one. So on the last episode, we explored all kinds of topic areas.
Yeah.
We listened to it in quick speed.
Quick speed, yeah.
And wrote them down. We're like, let's
not
overlap.
To try
not
to revisit too much.
Yeah, and I like that
idea. I do think one topic that should be rediscussed is creativity.
Okay.
Creativity is life.
It is a part.
Creativity is energy.
It's exactly what we're talking about with knowing what you don't know, knowing how you have to perform.
Right.
There's like writing the menu of what there is to learn. There's this whole like blank. It's like a video game, right? When you walk around a map on a video game, new areas of the game render that were unrendered before.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, well, there's a really great Tom Bilyeu podcast. I'll have to look up who he was interviewing, but they were talking about how that's the way reality works. Like, and it's this guy's a physicist it's new knowledge in a new area that he's figuring out, and it's his opinion that's the way reality works. Like, we render our own reality. We render the reality that we share and experience together as it is needed. It's amazing to think about things that way. But that I'm just trying to say, that's to me, that's the way creativity works. You have this part of life that is unexplored and can remain unexplored forever if no one walks in that direction.
Well, I'll say the majority of life is unexplored forever.
Yeah.
You can only do so much or learn so much or bump into so many people.
Well, it's like a door. Like, oh my gosh, it's like a hidden door, right? Like, you didn't know that was a door until you stumbled upon it. That's what creativity is. Something pops in your head and you recognize, oh my gosh, there's an opportunity here. There's an opportunity to learn. There's an opportunity to do new things. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, I love it. It totally makes sense. And you really kept hitting on a word that popped into my head without saying it, and it's travel. And not just international travel or traveling on a trip, just traveling through life, man. And that is where education is. But you've got to be vigilant. You've got to be systematic. If you want to get an education, it's all around you. Just grab it. Part of it can be schooling through a brick and mortar place with a fancy name or just a normal name. It can be online. We have this wonderful tool of the last 30 years called the internet. You can learn anything. But it's also just talking to people, bumping into a neighbor, asking a stranger something. Say, hey, you seem to know a lot about this. Teach me something. Like, we can travel conceptually and physically to gain experiences, and that is where education comes from. If you go through life and you don't get any scars, whether they're you know, a physical scar or just a mistake you've made or a failure, man, I think you're missing out on some awesome learning opportunities.
Curiosity
killed the cat.
It's the drive. I think it's the drive of the things that you're talking about. And I think that as you get older, fears hold you back from your curiosities. Also, learned aversion holds you back from your curiosities.
I like it. Absolutely. Curiosity is a huge part.
So maybe, and here's a new idea to explore when we're talking about education. What about the things that you should not learn? What about the things that you pick up along the way that are bad habits, that hold you back, that are self-limiting beliefs and or, you know, learned aversions, like as I put it?
Obviously.
At least being aware of those, right?
Yeah, I mean, now we're starting to, very pragmatic. Now we can get more philosophical. Like there's, you know, when I hear something, the things you shouldn't learn, my libertarian radar goes off and is like, oh, I don't like that. Okay. Censorship, telling me what I should learn or not learn.
That's not what I'm saying.
Well, you see how I could take it that way.
Yeah, I can see how you take it that way. What I'm, I'm not even saying anything close to that.
Gotcha.
I think knowledge is power. I think knowing more is better. But what I'm saying is you can, it's like, there are things that are valuable to learn to stay away from, right? So like you don't touch a hot stove. You learn that when you're a kid the first time that you burn yourself because you get injured if you touch a hot stove. That is useful.
Yeah.
Now, not having an uncomfortable conversation could be something that you learn because the first time that you do it, you get yelled at. You go through an unpleasant experience that gets burned into your into your memory. And now you're afraid to confront people and have unpleasant conversations. And that's something that you have to unlearn. You
right.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's unlearning. The unlearning part of life is way more difficult than the learning part of life. But that's why the title of our podcast, Life Lab, Experience Experiments. An experiment, a truly scientific experiment, has to have a few things. One, it has to be repeatable by others. Two, it has to have a solid population from which you're testing it. So by somebody having one single experience and then forming a strong belief about that and never changing it, wow, that's the opposite of experimentation. Mm. There's no experimentation there. They're not even doing a second option. There's no control. Like, that to me is real problematic. And lots of people do it. I'm not disagreeing with your point. Do you see what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
We need to have a sample population of...
It needs to be a diverse sample.
Big.
And the experiment, you need a changing population from which to select your sample. And you need to vary your experiment methodology. Because here's what I'm saying. Let's just tie this back real easy. You can seek to solidify the same experience you just had over and over again, and that is false experimentation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You pick up what I'm putting.
100%.
If you generate a bias from the first time you experience something, you say, okay, this is what I learned from that experience, and I want to – that's the opinion I want to hold on to. So then I'm going to design all my experiences for the future seeking out a repetition of that result.
Yeah.
What I read and what I watch and the conversations
I have.
That's
the opposite of science. That's focusing on the scientist, the person trying to confirm beliefs. At the core of science, which is, I believe, truth, is method. It's rigorous, systematic method that can be tested. If it can't be tested, I don't label it as science.
And most of
social science, I don't believe is science because it's not repeatable and testable.
I'll even take it a step further. I can't remember who said it, but it was a scientist. They said true science is based on trying to disprove your first result.
Yeah, Karl Popper. It's all about falsification. Yeah. You should immediately, as soon as you have an idea or a model, if you're a scientist or a critical thinker, not try to find evidence that supports it, but try to blow it up from the beginning. But that's counterintuitive for how humans think, which is why it's such an admirable trait for scientists to have.
Exactly. If something is really true, then you should be able to test it from all angles and it should stand up.
Right.
You should be able to do different experiments, and it should always be the same result. You should be able to have a changing population, and you should arrive to the same result. You should be thinking of ways that it
– to disprove it.
Where it is true, and maybe like at least to limit its truth, right? So like to try to cut off the angles and say, well, it's only true in X, Y, and Z circumstances. You want to learn as much as you can.
Limiting
about
the scope. Popper said there's no such thing as a proven theory. There's only theories that have been disproven and that are waiting to be disproven.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was a terrible person to be around socially.
I can imagine. It's a tough mindset to keep. But yeah.
But it's very admirable.
Yeah, from a scientific perspective. Yeah.
But for me, education, schooling, learning, it's knowledge, it's skills, it's experiences. If I could give my kids one thing, it's method. I want them to have a method for thinking, a method for learning, because then they can self-learn. We talk about machine learning. I want my kids to sort of take that mentality and be a machine about their own learning, continue to evolve how they learn, be comfortable being uncomfortable, learning and hearing different things.
What's your method?
What do you mean?
What's your method for learning?
Oh, mine personally?
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of do what I call the rabbit hole. I'm eclectic, so I allow life to bump into me, and I'll read different things, and then you see how the notes I take. So anything I read, I don't like to read on a screen because I'm a little old school. Because I'm writing. I literally go back and forth with the author I'm writing about, and then I extract all my notes. And then from those notes or conversations I have with people, I take notes. I have specific sections. Those sections are key themes, action items, resources to dig into, general notes. And then I go into the resources to dig into, and I actually then read. So I read lots of different things.
So let me break this down. So you read a book. As you are reading the book or the paper, you print it out. You make notes on
lots
it.
Lots of notes.
When you are done, you go back and you write your notes on a separate piece of paper.
I type them up. Reading a book to me is quite a commitment because I have a pet peeve where once I start, I have to finish, even if it's a shitty book. It's terrible, but it's just I'm a weirdo. So it's not just reading the book. Then I have to go back through the book and pull out all my notes. So it's a double process. Like it takes me a while if it's a good book. I've got a ton of notes. But then from there, that's just step one, which I call incubation phase, letting the ideas sink in, thinking about how I can connect it to other things. Then the action phase is, where can I put this into action in Spark the Discussion, in my household, parenting my kids or with my wife, with Raven Advisors, with the Post Sports Bar and Grill, teaching. If I'm not able to put an idea into action, this works for me. I almost get mad at myself. Like, you're wasting this knowledge, this awesome thing that this author or this person created or put together, and you're not using it. You're just keeping it to yourself in your own private brain. That's bullshit, Zach. Like, that's how I kind of think about it.
That's awesome.
Oh, I don't know if it's awesome. It's just how I do it.
I think it's great.
But then the other thing is what I showed you right here. I kind of stole this idea from Charlie Munger, who is Warren Buffett's somewhat silent business partner for Berkshire Hathaway. Anyway, he has what he calls his lattice work, and he's written all about them. And anyway, it's the key ideas that he's taken from life, and he's all about thinking through problems from a multidisciplinary perspective, which is what we've talked quite a bit about today. And finally, so lots of people just try to take his lattice work and just say, I'm going to think through problems how he does. And he's just like, you're missing the point. So I went through all my notes as I was doing that project when the pandemic kicked off, and I pulled out what I thought were my best life lessons that I could give to my children to think through problems. And so I have this list here that I just call my mental models and heuristics. And to me, this is like of everything I've learned through formal schooling, through education, through my travels, through my experiences, this list of, I think, 36 things I find to be very important for me.
That's a good amount of things. And these are not simple concepts.
No, and I don't. It's not like I have this list memorized. I pull this out and I look at these things when I bump into something that I need to think through critically.
So how are you going to use this list? How are you going to get this list from your brain to your kids?
I already do. I build in all kinds of lessons all the time. You know, I do things around the house, making lemonade. I literally created a series where every single lemonade episode, I can point to which one of these we're talking about, but I don't have to call it that.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I just find creative ways to bring this in, you know.
It's through projects and activities. Yeah,
yeah.
With your kids.
But not like lessons, not like a teaching lesson, like a thing. I want them to learn by doing, and I want them to fail.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good. You know, you were talking about your method, and I like it right now. I like it right now. Why? Because I'm in the phase of life where it's about execution. It's about providing. It's about, you know, building for the future.
Yeah.
Right? We're stacking away I'm those acorns. Right? And we're both in that. And I think what you're talking about, if you're going to go through the effort of reading a book, then you need to – don't let that slip through the cracks. You don't – you got a net, but those ideas will fall through the net if you don't make sure that you take the time to cultivate them. And that's what you're saying you do. You write your notes, conglomerate them all together, and then say, okay, which of these are actionable? And then challenge yourself to take action on them. So I think for our phase in life, it's really good. You know, and I would say for probably the majority of life, it's really good.
That's just for me, though.
Here's what I'll say. When you're really young, I would say for the younger side of people, maybe that's a little bit too structured, and maybe you need to fall back more on like use those ideas and try to synthesize them, but let them come and go. Like,
yeah. I didn't do this until I was in my 30s.
Yeah. Like it's fine if you lose some of them.
20s. No, I started doing it my PhD program.
And I would say I might adopt that, but when I'm older, I think I will let that go because
it's
going to
change.
Yeah. I will want to be when I'm in a different phase in my life, I'm just looking at ikigai, right? I'm going to care less about the paid for part, the whatever, the parts that actually are like producing results. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably care more about feelings. You know what I mean?
But this lattice work doesn't, it's not like anything has to do about making money. These are conceptual things to think through any problem.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, I think you're where I'm saying is I might not want to put them into action.
Sure.
I might just want it for a thought. I might just want it for a feeling. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, and the other thing is if you ask me what's the 10 best books you've read, what day are you asking me? I don't know. My anti-library is a billion times bigger than my library. There's way more knowledge out there I haven't consumed. So I can tell you what the 10 best books up to date today that I've read. But once I get into a book, I tend to get consumed with it and I really get into
you
it
do.
And it becomes important to me and I learn a lot about it and I try to take action on it right away. So in a year, if you ask me, it'll be different. And so this little thing you're looking at will probably be updated to some degree. Some might fall off. I might add some others, but for me to act like this is going to be the list when I'm 90, the age of, you know, Charlie Munger, he's 96, that's silly. Of course it won't, because there will be new things I've learned.
You go deep. And I'll say this. I think that the way you structured your life, and this is important. I think we're talking about something that's important. The way you've structured your life has allowed it. You went into academia, where this was not only encouraged, it was required. No. And so that you were able to hone this and develop this for yourself and learn how to teach and instruct others in ways that they can learn. So you are an expert in education.
Yeah,
both yourself and
that term.
Yeah, whatever.
But I know which I see what you mean.
You are.
I appreciate
you are much more studied and practiced in it than way, you know, 99 point something percent of people. OK, so there's that. Second, now you're at a phase in your life where you built a consulting business and recurring revenues have allowed you have time now, which is great, right? And so you can continue this method.
I can hone it, really.
Yeah. So what I'll say is this method is probably – it's not for everyone. If you have a 9-to-5 job and kids and you got to get them to activities, you can't do this method.
You can't do this. No. And I'm not advocating everybody should.
Right. But
it's nuts to think about. Dude, every night, 7 nights a week in my bed, I'm literally have my laptop out and I'm extracting notes from my just books I read. And and people are always like, what are you reading? Oh, is that for like class or something? No, just my weirdo personal shit. And I don't know when these notes, but I'll tell you, boy, I have a folder on my computer of it's just labeled reading and notes. And there is a lot in there that I go to and the kids will get to use and shit, I could probably sell, but that's not the point.
You know what's crazy? So I read nonstop. And I lose more than I keep.
Oh, of course. Everyone does.
I don't do this method, man. Well, nobody I let does. It come and go. You know what I mean? It's so many. You make fun of me for it because you go, hey, I read this somewhere. I saw
it's
this
It's not
somewhere.
Just me. Everybody Whatever. That knows you does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I latch on to the things that are important
thing.
To
yeah,
me.
Yeah, you sharing what you're learning. Right. That's a good thing.
So, but I latch on to ideas and concepts that are important to me, but I don't save the metadata about them. It's from this book that was written by this person at this time or this article that was ran in this publication at this time. That's metadata about the idea that I don't care about. And I let it go.
See, I think that's where I got programmed for my PhD is there's something called the hermeneutic circle. To truly understand and try to make sense of a text as deeply as possible, you not only have to think of that text, you have to think about the historical time in which that text was created and the influence that text and the person that wrote that text. So, and why I do all this is because I have to think about who was Zach 6 years ago when he was reading this text? Was he drunk Zach just playing school to get, like, that's really important because I can read the same book 10 times and take away 10 totally different things from it.
I love that because you got to look at your motivation of why did I latch onto that idea, right?
I mean, latching on, I'm looking at the book Anti-Fragile. I have a giant forearm tattoo that says anti, like, man. When I get into something, I commit to it and I want to take action on it. And that's just one example that, like, to me, That shifted my paradigm for how I'm thinking about life.
Yeah. That is education. That is learning, right? When you come across a new idea, set of ideas, framework for thinking, and it's a paradigm shift for you. Mm-hmm. It changes everything.
My worldview. I used to be all about resiliency. Man, I just want resilient kids. And now I just see that as weak. I'm like, resilient? No, that's not good enough. Anti-fragile. That's where it's at. And we don't need to get into it. But I like to read things that pop my worldview and go, you had it wrong, brother. And I embrace that. And I'm open for that. And to me, that's exciting. And I can understand why it's really unnerving for other folks.
It is. It's unnerving to me. I mean,
it's unnerving to me.
Well, I'm just saying, like, there are so many things that I was sure about that turned out to be untrue or just never materialized. And I'm just glad I didn't get a tattoo about them.
But the cool thing is, I'll just cross that one out and write the next thing next to it.
I'm just messing with
you. No, I know.
I'm messing with you.
Well, I'm good. You have anything else? And if not, I can wrap up.
Oh, man. Education, it's a thing. If you want to – okay, so if you want to listen to our first episode, we talked about things like, you know, wisdom versus education. We talked about the actual education model that's in use in the Western world, the Prussian model.
It's like a factory model.
Yeah, which is a factory model versus all of these creative things that we've talked about. Zach mentioned Khan Academy, and there are dozens of others. We talked about, you know, standardized testing, getting stuck in your ways as you get older.
And again, this was all from our first education episode.
Yep. We talked about creativity versus constraint. We talked about experiential learning versus cognitive learning. And we talked about learning from feedback. And we talked about college versus owning a business. All of those things. So I'd say, like, our first episode around this was much more concrete, much more tied to education. We gave education definitions, one that was wonky,
critiquing the system of education and highlighting how education is brought into the work world, I think we discussed as well.
I like this episode better because it's much more higher level. It's much more theory. We're talking about learning to learn.
Well, learning is at the core, whether it's schooling or education, which are different things in my opinion. It doesn't matter because what you should be focused on is the learning aspect, not the teaching part, but the learning part.
And the unlearning of certain
things. And that's the harder part, especially for things related to humans, the social science stuff. Physics, most people don't have to worry about that when they start bumping into it because there's not much they need to unlearn because it's more fundamental.
I'll give a change challenge.
Okay.
Develop your methodology for learning. Zach knows his. Most people don't. Most people, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so with me, I know I'm going to develop a learning methodology. I'm going to do this change challenge. Mine will not be as rigid and structured as Zach's. It can't be. I don't have the luxury of time in order to do that. So I enjoy the idea of letting some things go, letting some things come and some things go and being okay with that. So mine will be more structured than it is now without any structure. But it'll be less structured than Zach's. So what is yours? Think about what yours is and think about how you want to take the ideas you come across, how you want to catalog them, learn them, absorb them, and which one and how you want to decide which ones that you put into action.
Nice.
Or which ones you just want to mull over and let them give you feelings about.
Perfect. I'll give my change challenge and then I'll just wrap us up. Mine is self-educate yourself on a topic that's interesting to you. Jump online, or I like to say use all available resources to you. And that is not just books or the internet and articles. It's people in your life, people around you. Find an expert and talk to them about something. It could be a simple DIY project around your house. It could be a gardening topic that you've always been interested in. It doesn't matter. Fitness, diet, love life, who knows? Go educate yourself. Learn something about and learn it. Read it from more than one source. At least do that. So mine's simple. Educate yourself about a new topic on your own and raise your level of expertise on that topic 3%.
Before you wrap up, one thing that as people are doing your change challenge that I've learned from Zach that I think everyone would benefit from learning. On that piece where he said use all the resources that are available to you, everyone feels comfortable Googling things. Most people feel comfortable reading, looking for books to find things. Some people feel comfortable, you know, going out and trying to experience things. Your thing about finding an expert, I think, is a cheat code in life.
Pull a George Bush.
That people don't.
Teach me. You know a lot about this. Give me something. And you got to just listen. No matter what they say, even if they're saying stuff or you don't like the way they're saying it, it doesn't matter. When you choose to select the role of student, you can't critique the teacher's instruction method. So when you say, teach me about something, you just got to listen and soak that in and mine it for the nuggets that are useful.
And I think it's so powerful because I would think a majority of people would think, I don't want to bother that person.
It's the opposite.
Experts want to share that knowledge.
No. Humans want to share our knowledge.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And they'll be flattered that you're
absolutely
reaching out to them.
Absolutely. It enhances their self-esteem and status. But you got to ask them at the right time. And there's a whole art to how you do it. So be smart about it. But
yeah, Zach does it. Zach practices this. He'll reach out to people on Twitter. He will reach out to people. He'll email them. He'll even write these people. And we're talking about real experts here. We're talking about sending letters to Warren Buffett until he gets a response type stuff, right? So he practices this and it is a super powerful thing. Imagine if Google could ask you questions back and determine what information is most important for you and only give that curated information. That's what experts can do.
It will someday.
It will someday.
But that's what experts
do. Until we get to that level, right now, speaking with an expert to me is one of the most powerful ways to gain
knowledge.
And
don't trick yourself into thinking that only experts only have credentials, because that's not true. That's not true.
Yep.
So excellent. Great point. What did we talk about? We talked about difference between education, schooling, and learning. Learning is at the core of all of it. Remember that you are not rewarded in life or ever hired for a job for what you know. You are only given those two things for what you do with what you know. Dave and I both believe that learning and the process of learning is much more important than where you go to school or the type of education or credentials you receive. Know that status in our psychology is bound up in that whole process, and you can't separate yourself from it, us included. Creativity is a very important, tangentially related component to education and learning. Remember that when you're learning, what you're trying to give yourself is ammo for good judgment. You're simply trying to make better decisions and better choices in life is what you're, in essence, trying to do. So we hope you've enjoyed what we've discussed. You got a couple great change challenges. And as we always say at Life Lab, experiment with life.